This is White Sox Weekly, your two-hour all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Drive in the air, deep to right, it is gone!
This is a presentation of the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Well, welcome in to White Sox Weekly, day before Mother's Day. That causes alarm bells to go off inside your brain, then you have not bought flowers and you have not made proper preparations for Mother's Day. But if you're on top of things, like yours truly, sort of, then you're all set and ready to go, and this Saturday can be full of baseball as we prepare for another Mother's Day, one of the best holidays on the calendar. Welcome to the show. Sox fans, start planning your group outing to the ballpark. We have party areas of all sizes that can be perfect for you and your group. Learn more about our spaces, including the CIBC Fan Deck or a patio party. For more information, visit whitesox.com/party or call or text 312-674-1000. A little bit of White Sox news as we get started here on White Sox Weekly. Just a little bit ago, Sox made a roster move. We'll tell you about that in just a moment. We got a ball game coming up tonight. White Sox dropped the first against the Astros. It's the first of a nine-game, 10-day homestand last night, and it did not go the White Sox way, that's for sure. The offense stymied by a couple of different Houston pitchers, J.P. France, Hector Neris, Brian Abreu, and Ryan Pressly, to name the quartet that worked for Houston last night. They got two more and a chance to take a home series. It is a really big portion of the White Sox schedule right now. You know, the last week was up and down for the White Sox, to be sure. 3-4 on the road trip, now 3-5 in the last week total. They played a good series in Cincinnati after playing a good series against the Minnesota Twins. But when they head to Kansas City, things went sideways a little bit. KC won the first one in a blowout. Lucas Giolito continues to pitch exceptionally well and did so in that second game against KC. So that was a split of the first two. Sox got blown out in the third one, and then in that fourth ball game with a 3-3 tie in the bottom of the ninth, the Royals were able to take a leadoff bunt, work them all the way over to third base, leadoff bunt and a single, and then another bunt. A safety squeeze ended up being the death knell for the White Sox on that particular day. A lot of rain over the last week. There have been three rain delays in the last four games, not counting today, starting yesterday and working backward, three rain delays in the last four. So that can tax a pitching staff at times. Fortunately for the White Sox, it hasn't, not in the way you'd get a rain delay in the middle of a game and then have to tap into more pitchers or what have you. The White Sox have not had to scratch a starter or anything like that, which has been very good. You know, but it can be taxing a little bit, sitting around there waiting in the clubhouse for your name to be called, for your number to be called. So it has been, you know, one of those weeks where, you know, unfortunately, from both sides, the offensive standpoint and the pitching standpoint, it's been a little bit more of the same with some brighter lights probably on both sides of things. It's just been tough for those brighter lights to shine through given the fact that the team is now 13-27. The division, the AL Central, continues to keep the White Sox more or less in it. It is not unfathomable for them to make up the ground that they need to make up, but they need to start playing better baseball in order to get themselves to that point. The White Sox are also on the verge, it looks like, of bringing back a couple of big-time contributors to their bullpen in Liam Hendricks and Garrett Crochet. Either one of them could be joining the ball club in the next couple of days. Liam's got one more rehab assignment, we know for sure. Could be more, but at least one more rehab assignment coming up tomorrow for the Charlotte Knights. He worked in back-to-back days in Thursday and Friday's ball game. Nope, sorry about that. Wednesday and Thursday's ball game. Friday and Saturday off. He'll pitch again on Sunday. And then a big evaluation of where things are at, where Liam's at, where the stuff is at, where the bounce back is at, all that good stuff after the game on Sunday. The AAA schedule is off on Monday, so they may use that day as well. The White Sox are off on Monday. So even if Liam came back to Chicago, there would be no ball game for him to play in on Monday, which would be convenient from an evaluation standpoint. The big news today for the White Sox is that Elvis Andrus, who left the game last night, was placed on the injured list this afternoon. It is an oblique strain for Elvis. Romy Gonzalez who was on the injured list with a hamstring issue, was activated today. So he takes the roster spot. One even flip. Andrus on the IL and Roby Gonzalez back from the injured list. We do have a lineup out for the White Sox and Astros today already. I'm going to run you through that real quick because I think what you're thinking is the same as what Pedro Grifol was thinking, or what Pedro was thinking is the same as what you're thinking. In the second base spot today and hitting seven is Hanser Alberto. Now, Hanser's been swinging a hot bat for the White Sox over the last couple of weeks, and you want to try and keep that guy in your lineup and feeling the way he has. This is why he's here. He can play a bunch of different positions, third, second, a little bit of short if he absolutely had to, some first base he's played already. He's played more second base than any other spot in his big league career, and definitely over the last couple of years, that has been the case. Alberto, since the month of May started, and you can go back even a little bit farther if you want it, but since the month of May started, has hit .281, the .355 on base percentage, and a .594 slugging percentage. He has hit two home runs, walked three times, driven in eight, struck out five times. It's just been a real good smattering of performances for Hanser Alberto. And some of those home runs, I think both of them have come in situations where the White Sox needed those dingers in order to keep things going for themselves against the Reds. Well, you know, one of them was in a loss to the Reds on 5-3, 5-3 ball game, and the other was in that 17-4 blowout. He's got the three-run homer, his first of the season against the Twins that helped the Sox win a ball game back on April 10th. But what this enables, what this ought to enable Pedro Grifol to do is turn to a guy who's been swinging it well, a veteran who understands that position. Granted, hasn't played a whole lot of second base so far this year. It's been mostly third base for Hanser Alberto. And then Roby Gonzalez. You know, this is it's been a real tough start to the season for Romy. A lot of strikeouts, not much contact. He'd gotten spattering playing time left and right field, a little bit of second base, not a whole lot. I believe he spotted in at third once or twice, just late in games. And I think there was a lot of expectation, as much as you can have, on a guy that, you know, might be your 24th or 25th or 26th man on the roster, depending on how you want to look at it, when the White Sox broke camp. And Romy, who had a lot of conversation about him and around him during the offseason, up until the point the White Sox signed Elvis Andrus to be their starting second baseman, he was that guy, right? I mean, Rick Hahn and Pedro Grifol both really looked forward to the opportunity of getting regular at-bats to Roby Gonzalez, and in the end, the ball club decided that turning to a veteran, a guy who made a lot of impact with the White Sox in the year prior in 2022, might have been the more stable decision. And you can definitely think along those lines and go, okay, yeah, I can see where that it makes a lot of sense. It gives Romy a little bit of a, as much as other guys, a little bit of runway up to the beginning of the season, through the beginning of the season. Chance to get your feet wet, chance to make some impact and provide some opportunity, but not feel like you might drown, you know, if you're going to be out there every day and going through it a little bit, kind of in your first full run big league season. Romy hadn't made a team out of spring training in his career prior to this, so what had happened instead of providing that that smooth runway up to bigger opportunities, perhaps, for Roby Gonzalez, was it was difficult for him to find those kind of regular at-bats or success in the intermittent at-bats that he'd gotten. A lot of strikeouts, like I said earlier, for Roby Gonzalez. But he is back on the roster and hopefully feeling a lot better. It was a shoulder strain for Romy that had kept him out over the last couple of weeks. Elvis Andrus, in case you're just tuning in, on the injured list with a strained oblique. I would bet that there's a lot of Hanser Alberto at second base for the Sox here over the next little bit. The White Sox did just get Yoan Moncada back last night. That was a big thing for the lineup, though the pitching of the Houston Astros did kind of keep the White Sox quiet. Only four base runners all night last night. Luis Robert on base twice, a homer, a single. Gavin Sheets walked, and Sebi Zavala sprayed one into right field. Those were the only four base runners for the White Sox last night. Everybody else out on ground out or strikeout, it felt like a couple of pop-ups in there too. But with Moncada back, what that does for Grifol in this lineup is first and foremost allow that switch hitter, a guy who can take a patient AB, and kind of stands out as his style of approach kind of stands out in a lineup that can be very swingy. You know, this has been the case for the White Sox over the last couple of years, and you can get by, you can thrive with an offense that likes to swing a lot if and when you're making contact and hitting a lot of home runs. Unfortunately for the White Sox so far this year, there have not been a lot of home runs, 41 as a team on the season, which ranks them right about the low middle end of the bigs, lowish middle end. The lowest number of the year is 19 team total in home runs, the Cleveland Guardians, and they are better than the White Sox in terms of win-loss record so far this year in the Central. So it's not a measure of everything, but it is how you get around some of those propensities for some White Sox hitters. Now, what Moncada does differently is work walks, work counts, and provide that kind of on-base percentage in more than just your batting average, essentially. When Yoan had gotten started to the season, my goodness, did things start well for him. He had a seven-game hit streak to begin his 2023. He hit 308 in the first nine games he played. That's as many as he got before the protruding disc in his back ended up being too much and forcing him to the injured list. And what it sounds like when you talk to Yoan, as we everybody did at the ballpark yesterday, when you talk to Pedro Grifol, this is not a thing that is... It's definitely an issue that's subsided. It's not an issue that's absolutely gone away, and it may not be one that completely goes away for some time. Backs are tricky is one of the things that Pedro has continued to say. And Yoan, for his part yesterday, kind of characterized it like this. He said, from the left side, swinging, everything feels absolutely normal. From the right side, not normal, but definitely good enough to work with. I'm paraphrasing just a little bit, of course, but that's essentially where Moncada kind of felt himself and kind of understood himself to be coming back to the active roster and ready to roll. You could certainly not argue with the production in his minor league rehab appearances, although, as we've talked about quite a bit, it is far more important. I mean, the production is nice, especially when you've got a big league veteran down there making his minor league rehab starts and making mincemeat out of AAA pitching, as Yoan did. He hit two home runs, hit something like 508 or 480-something down at AAA in about five and a half games. He came into and out of two early games at third base, just kind of working back in, making sure things were fine. So it's not a full, you know, assortment of at-bats that you'd normally get, but plenty for a guy with the established big league experience like Yoan Moncada to feel like he's ready to go. I got to tell you, the at-bats did not look bad for Moncada last night. He was 0 for 4 like everybody else in the top four spots in the White Sox lineup. He had two groundouts in the first two at-bats, one to first base, a sharp one to Jose Abreu over at first, one comebacker to the pitcher that was a little more softly hit, a real hard hit baseball to the second baseman, and then a strikeout in the ninth inning to end things there. So Moncada, I thought, was kind of keying on pitches that looked like, you know, pitches you can do some damage with. You want to make sure your assessment of what that player looks like is, you know, are you swinging at pitches that are in and around the strike zone? Are you positive that kind of command of strike zone is there? That's so key to Moncada's game. And then obviously the other side of all of this conversation with Yoan Moncada, and I think it is a big part of this conversation, is of course the defense, right? The White Sox have gotten a lot of offensive production from third base so far this year. I mean, they really have, whether it's Moncada's first seven games, Jake Berger filling in after that and hitting the daylights out of baseball after baseball, or, as we talked about earlier, Hanser Alberto playing as well as he has at third base and swinging a good bat here in the month of May, hitting 280 with an on-base percentage a little over 400, believe it or not, in the month of May. I mean, it's been that kind of good for Hanser Alberto. What's maybe lacking there a bit, and I think most of this speaks to how good Moncada is at third and less so, you know, what you're getting from the other guys, is Moncada's really good at third base. That infield defense is really good. And if the White Sox, though they are more of a fly ball pitching staff, if the White Sox can be confident that a ball hit to the left side of the infield with Moncada and Anderson over there is going to be gobbled up and thrown over to first, that helps the run prevention, and the White Sox need as much help on the run prevention side as you can get. Every team does. But the White Sox, the way they've been, you know, walking hitters so far this year and allowing extra base hits, until that turns around, until that gets fixed to, you know, more of the back of the baseball card stuff, you'd love to have that kind of defense there. And it has been very good in just in one game, and still waiting for the production to return. But just in one game, it's been real good to see Moncada back in the lineup and ready to go for the White Sox. He's back in there again today. We'll go through the full lineup when we come back. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. You want to talk a little White Sox this afternoon as we lead into the pregame show for the White Sox and Astros. Feel free. We're your show. I'm Connor McKnight. This is White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Powering biz. ComEd. Powering lives. Savings figure is hypothetical only. Actual savings will vary based on the measures implemented and on customers' usage and rate.
It's simple. The ESPN Chicago app.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. We got the White Sox at Astros coming up a little later this evening. Oh, by the way, a White Sox 10-game ticket plan gives you the ultimate flexibility. Pick games based on your schedule and your budget. Don't miss any of the action in 2023. For more information, visit whitesox.com/ticket plans or call 312-674-1000. We've got the lineup in full. We'll get you that in just 10 seconds. We'll pause it here real quick for station identification.
Live from the Old National Bank State Street Studio.
This is WMVP WSHE HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
So here's your 1-9 for the White Sox against the Astros tonight. Tim Anderson's in the top spot playing shortstop. Been kind of a tough go for Tim since coming back off the injured list. Still great to see him in the White Sox lineup, obviously. Man, he absolutely beat the daylight out of a baseball to Jose Abreu last night. First batter of the game for the White Sox. Of course, the Astros batting in the top of the first. Hit a hard hopper over to Abreu, glove side. He went down, scooped it up on one hop, and jogged it over to first base. Tim kind of gave him a little, you know, friendly punch in the back kind of thing. I know that sounds weird. A friendly punch in the back, Connor? Can you friendly punch anyone? No, not really. But Tim did, and you can if you've been teammates with a guy for the better part of a decade. So that's, you know, that's how that started last night for TA. Andrew Benintendi in left field. He's batting second. Andrew Vaughn is at first base, batting three. Yoan Moncada is at third base, of course, and he's batting four. Luis Robert Jr. is in center field, and Gavin Sheets is in right field for the White Sox. Hanser Alberto, as we mentioned, is going to play second base and bat seven. Sebi Zavala will catch and bat eight. Carlos Perez is the designated hitter for the White Sox tonight, and he is going to bat nine. So the issue here, too, we talked about Yasmani Grandal, or rather, sorry, we talked about Elvis Andrus placed on the injured list this afternoon. A strained oblique, the issue for Elvis. Romy Gonzalez activated from the IL to take his space on the roster. But the other kind of, you know, the day-to-day thing the White Sox are dealing with right now is Yasmani Grandal. He's got a hamstring tweak, it sounds like. Pedro Grifol was pretty adamant that this was a hamstring issue that was not affecting, you know, his back, which had grabbed at him a little bit on a swinging strikeout against the Reds last weekend. But hamstrings are, you know, trouble. They're problematic. They can be a day-to-day thing. And Grifol, in his pregame press conference with reporters yesterday, was pretty clear when asked about whether there's an IL situation coming up for Yasmani Grandal that they just didn't know yet. That with hamstrings, you've got to let that timeline play out a little bit. What you don't want to do, Grifol said, is put a guy on the injured list when it might be, you know, you wake up the next morning, even 2 days after, and it's more a 3 or 4 day hamstring issue, especially when you're dealing with a catcher, right? There's limited resources there when it comes to catchers on your 40-man roster. But with Grandal, he is also, while Eloy Jimenez is out, while Jake Berger is out, while they wait for some of those, you know, those two power bats to get back into action, he's been serving as you know, lefty pop, as a switch hitter, DH catcher combo sort of thing. And he's been having a pretty good start to the season. If you look at the numbers for Yasmani Grandal at the start of this year, they look pretty similar to Yasmani Grandal, really. I mean, yeah, there was the second half of the 2021 season where he came back and was absolutely, came back from that knee issue and was absolutely, I mean, just crushing the baseball in terms of slugging percentage. I mean, really a lot of power for Grandal in the second half of 2021. That stands out as kind of the high watermark. He's never slugged more than the 520 that he slugged in that season, 2021. But so far this year, Grandal is hitting 270 with a 349 on base percentage and slugging 426. That is right in line with career averages. He's a career 434 slug. He's a career 350 on base within 4 or 5 points on either side of those. And he's hitting 270, which is, call it 30 points better than his career average. I think what we've seen with Yasmani Grandal this year is, you know, you look around the league, and I'm sure there are other cases that speak as loudly to the change in defense as Yasmani Grandal, but it's really difficult for anybody to look at that and tell me that that's not the shift ban working just how you thought the shift ban would. I wasn't, and I talked about this, you know, all through the offseason and during the lockout in years past, because it was a big topic of conversation in that lockout season as the two sides discussed the CBA and potential rules changes and all that other kind of stuff. I wasn't a big fan of the idea of banning the shift. A lot of different reasons behind that, the most of which was going to be, it didn't sound to me like that's what it was going to, that it was going to shorten games, that it was going to provide what baseball kind of said it would provide. I'm happy to say I've been somewhat wrong on those accounts, although the pitch clock, I think, has done more work to level out some of those things than the shift ban. But everybody, I mean everybody, including myself, you know, I'm not any dumber or smarter than anybody else on this one necessarily, looked at a lefty hitter like Yasmani Grandal, a guy with some pretty good power. Let's call it exit velocity, right, instead of just power. Because I think when we say power, sometimes we just kind of think of, you know, ball over fence kind of stuff. Good exit velocity is a guy that can get the barrel to the baseball, isn't fast, and is left-handed. That guy, Yasmani Grandal, Anthony Rizzo to a certain degree for the Yankees, like those were the dudes, Joey Gallo, though he makes a lot more contact in the air and to the pole side than he does ground balls to the pole side. But those kind of hitters are guys that everyone expected to benefit from the fact that defenses had to be two on either side, two on the left and two on the right. Nobody behind second base, not the way we used to be. I think that 270 average, you know, at least 10, 15, 20 points of that feels like the defensive change. The last time Yasmani Grandal hit anywhere over 245 was his rookie season where he played 60 games and hit 297 for the Padres in 2012. So that's not to say that this is mirage, because that's what baseball is now. You know, we're not going back to the defenses where you can stack the right side or put up a wall on the left side and just say, all right, hit it the other way and go. That's not the world we live in anymore. And baseball, like many other sports, I don't see retreating from those rules changes anytime soon. In fact, I think we'll probably end up with more rules changes, probably not next year, but down the road. More rules changes rather than rescinding some of those that we already have. So all that to say, Yasmani Grandal has been a pretty meaningful offensive contributor to the White Sox so far this year, and his, you know, kind of day-to-day nature at this point puts another spot in the White Sox lineup up to a young player who's got some pop and does have, you know, a couple of standout skills, but hasn't been tested to prove those at the big league level quite yet. Carlos Perez is going to DH for the White Sox today, while Sebby Zavala, the other catcher, one of the three catchers on the White Sox roster, will do the work behind the plate. I also think that when you look at, and DJ talked about this during the ballgame last night, when you look at roster construction now, I think one of the things that matters quite a bit, you know, we talk, okay, in the offseason, I'll talk a lot in spring training about, okay, your starting five is your starting five, but really, I'm interested in terms of assessing depth about what your starters 6, 7, 8 all look like, right? I get that you, whatever team we're talking about here, has a good 1 through 5, right? But tell me what the rest of that infrastructure's pitching depth looks like, that organizational pitching depth looks like. Take the Rays, for example. They've gotten off to an unbelievable start to the season, 20-10 on the year. They are dealing with injuries up and down their quote-unquote starting rotation. And I only say that because though they've gotten to a lot more of a traditional starting rotation over the last two seasons, they are not afraid of using the opener. They're not afraid of quick hooks for their starters. So it is a little bit different the way the Rays are set up than the way most teams are. However, they're really having to make a lot of things over on the fly due to injuries to some big-time guys in that starting rotation. Drew Rasmussen just hit the injured list with a flexor strain in his elbow, which, you know, hopefully not for Rasmussen, but is often a precursor injury to a Tommy John situation. Again, you hope that's not the case, but that's just the way things end up kind of going sometimes. So when you look at that catcher depth, kind of in the same way now, given the fact that we've got 26-man rosters, that a lot of teams, you look at the Baltimore Orioles kind of in the same way, they use Adley Rutschman as a catcher and a DH quite often. Obviously, he's a young player, doesn't have the litany of injuries that catchers do by the time they get to 30, 35. But Rutschman is a guy that they want to are trying to look out for and make sure that they've got bats for, regardless of what the rest of that roster looks like. So the Orioles are one of the teams carrying three catchers on that roster. The White Sox now, with a couple of different injuries having popped up to players over the last little bit, Eloy Jimenez being the one that actually put Carlos Perez on the roster, you know, they've gone to three catchers as well. And I think that kind of construction makes sense. I also wouldn't be, you know, all that surprised. And you know, given the way 40-man rosters are, you know, if you take a guy, for those of you who aren't all that familiar with the kind of the inner workings of the roster stuff, when you take a guy off your 40-man roster, you do submit him to waivers throughout the rest of the league, right? So if I take a guy, designate him for assignment or outright him or what have you, all sorts of different ways that you can remove a guy from a 40-man roster, that guy is then exposed to waivers for every other team in baseball. And I believe the way it works still, and details of the new CBA are still coming out. I would be surprised if this has changed. But I believe it works from the reverse record in the American League and then the same in the National League if you're releasing an American League guy. So you release a player from the 40-man, you're an American League team, the worst team in the league gets a chance, second worst, third worst, fourth worst, so forth and so on, all the way down to the best team. And that process repeats itself in the National League. And if that player clears waivers, if nobody puts a claim on him, then you can return him, depending on his major league rights, to your AAA team or your AA team or whatever. It's a lot of, if you're a huge baseball roster nerd like I am, then you're interested in this kind of thing. I've cut out I've yada 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 to the back end of the 40-man roster conversation because it probably deserves to be yada yada yada. However, it's worth talking about when you're talking about the catchers here, because making that next move, right? If Grandal needs to hit the injured list, and we don't know that that's the case right now, then you may see a situation where the White Sox are looking to add another catcher to the 40-man to, you know, back them up, to have some insurance there. Because if you lose another one, you've got to add another catcher some way, somehow. No big league ball club, none of them, absolutely zero of them, are going to go into a single big league game with just one active, healthy catcher. That just, you just don't see that happen. So there would be, you know, probably that next domino down the road, which would start to, you know, kind of shake the wheels a little bit. I think too, you know, when we look at what's been going on with the White Sox over the last week and a half of baseball, I think, you know, last night's results included, they're beginning to play better baseball. The question I think that's fair to still ask is whether or not they can make that brand of better baseball a more consistent brand of baseball for them. They are still bringing in, or bringing back, I should say, some of their regular players, some of their big-time contributors. And that bullpen, the White Sox bullpen, could change quite a bit in the next week or so with both Garrett Crochet and Liam Hendricks coming back into the mix. However, I think it's kind of clear over the last 5 days, 8 days, 10 days, 15 days, that the more important thing for the White Sox when it comes to playing better baseball is offensive production, right? I mean, if you've got big-time arms in the back of the bullpen, like the way Joe Kelly's been throwing, like the way Keenan Middleton's been throwing, like the way Hendricks has thrown in the past and likely will again, and the way Crochet has thrown in the past and likely will again, then you've got guys that can lock down leads. You've got to get those guys leads. And sure, that's kind of working around some of the issues in the bullpen. Reynaldo Lopez, it looks like, could use a bit of a reset. I think the stuff, the velo, the it's all still there. You know, getting that reworked a little bit might take a day or two, might take a week or two of some lower leverage opportunities that the White Sox could probably afford to give him should Crochet and Hendricks come back into the mix here over the next week. You could get kind of a, you know, a double plus sort of thing going on there. Not just getting those guys back, but also getting a chance to reset a guy like Reynaldo Lopez to then offer him bigger leverage situations down the line, like he had last year in such a great 2022 season. But offensively, you know, this is where the White Sox need more runners. They need more base runners. You look at last night's ball game, and there were 6 of 9 innings. 6 of the 9 where the White Sox were 3 up and 3 down against the Astros. There are a lot of ground balls for this team right now. Luis Robert hit the stitches off a baseball for a home run. That was in the second, and that was an absolute, I mean, it was great. It was awesome to see, and Luis Robert has played really well. But just like we said about Michael Kopech's start, not last night, but the start before against the Cincinnati Reds, where he gave up 4 solo home runs, solo shots, and that's what Luis Roberts was, don't often beat you. The 3-run homers, those are the ones that help a lot. Multi-run shots, those are the ones that help a lot. And if you can get base runners on via walk, via ground ball, via base hit, via hit by pitch, those home runs matter a lot more than the solo shots that often won't beat you. So I think offensively is where this thing needs to start turning for the White Sox. There are, obviously, that's not to say that there aren't ways that you could, and guys that could pitch better for the Sox. There are, obviously, at 13 and 27, better opportunities or better production opportunities for some of those guys. But I'm looking primarily offensively for this team to get themselves back to playing the kind of baseball they need to play in order to jump back into this thing come middle of summer. 312-332-3776, that's the phone number. I'm Connor McKnight. This is White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Starting at 6 tickets per game, cheer on the White Sox from the comfort of your own private suite. The Suite Flex Plan allows you to select the games you want to attend. Multiple options available. For more information, visit whitesox.com/suiteflex. That's whitesox.com/suiteflex. Or call or text 312-674-1000. Want to talk a little bit about last night's game. We expect to be joined by White Sox reliever Keenan Middleton in a little while. We'll talk to Scott Merkin of MLB.com a bit after that. We'll talk a little bit about last night's game, but also I wanted to focus in on Michael Kopech's outing last night because it was, you know, it was a crazy one. And I think as we talked a lot about what the offense needs to look like, you know, in the first half hour of the show, what the offense needs to look like for this team to start making noise again, to start making other AL Central squads a little bit more scared, then the pitching side of thing needs conversation as well. And for Michael Kopech, somebody called during the Rain Delay Theater last night and asked, I think his name was Jake, and if it wasn't, and you are listening, Jake, I apologize, and will absolutely call you by your actual name as soon as I remember it. He asked whether the White Sox or the Red Sox won the Chris Sale trade. And I told him, I don't know that we can, A, answer that question yet, and B, I don't know that that's a fair way of setting up whether a trade was good or bad. It is absolutely true that a team can win or lose a trade. But it is also very true that both teams can win a trade. I think that's more rare, but I think it's absolutely possible. Let's take a look at a division rival and use a trade that happened last season to kind of illustrate the point, right? In the middle of the offseason, actually late in the offseason, the Minnesota Twins sent Luis Arraez to the Miami Marlins for Pablo Lopez, a right-handed starter. If you're a White Sox fan, and I'm sure you are because you're listening to this, you saw Pablo Lopez absolutely shove against the White Sox in his first start against them as a Minnesota Twin. That was back on April 11th. Lopez went 7 2/3, gave up 2 earned, struck out 10, walked 1, right? It had been a really good start to the season for Pablo Lopez. In his first 4, he had a 1.73 ERA in 26 innings of work. There was a hiccup right in the middle against the Washington Nationals and Kansas City Royals of all offenses. He allowed 11 earned runs in a 10-inning stretch. Then popped back with 2 good ones, one unfortunately against the White Sox where he went another 7 innings with 2 runs, and a 6 1/3 outing against the San Diego Padres. That was his last start on May 10th. So what you can absolutely say about the Minnesota Twins pickup of Pablo Lopez, and oh, by the way, they signed him to an extension just a couple of weeks ago. I think it's a 4-year, 70-ish million dollar deal, something like that, with a couple of options, as they usually are. But you flipped Luis Arraez for a 27-year-old starter and then signed him to an extension to further the issue, right? Because none of these things happen in a vacuum. The Minnesota Twins have been dealing with injuries in their starting staff, right? Kenta Maeda dealing with some issues. Tyler Molly, who they acquired from the Reds last year, is hurt again. He's made, I think, all of 9 starts for the Twins, counting last season and this. So getting Lopez back into that rotation, he was the guy that, in theory, in the offseason, elevated that starting five to something that's more than just guys. But now, with the injuries, you absolutely need Lopez as a centerpiece in that rotation to make that starting five, you know, a viable thing. And the Twins have, you know, kind of struggled like every other AL Central team. I'm sure you've seen the graphic whereby every single AL East team has a better record than every single AL Central team. And the Twins obviously reside in the Central alongside the White Sox. Now, let's look at the flip side of that trade. The Marlins are in a very... in a very different situation than most other ball clubs. And I don't want to poke fun, but there were a lot of offseason decisions by the Marlins that left some who were fans of infield defense, to say the least, to say nothing else, scratching their heads a bit. Luis Arraez is an exceptional hitter, a guy who hit .316 last year on his way to an All-Star nod and a Silver Slugger, but is a man kind of without a position, or at least that had been the book on him. Arraez has provided a .386 batting average and a .444 on-base percentage. He hit for the cycle about a week and a half ago for the Marlins. It's just been a really good start to the season, a truly impressive, everything you wanted kind of start from Luis Arraez for the Miami Marlins. So all that to say, who won the trade? I think the Marlins got exactly what they were looking for out of Luis Arraez. Sure, they're 19-20, but when you're adding just one player, I don't know that that's necessarily shifting. When you're trading for just one player, I don't know that you're necessarily shifting the balance of power. You are more redistributing your resources to be the better ball club that you can be. The Minnesota Twins, same conversation. They're absolutely, I think, a better ball club, though they do have some offensive issues, with Lopez there now and in the next couple of seasons than they would have been with Luis Arraez. Both teams, I think, so far, have won that trade. Now, it's May 13th, and a lot of things could change, and that's kind of the other side of the conversation. All right, so let's go back to Kopech, because I think the stuff you saw from Michael Kopech last night, 4 2/3, 2 earned runs, 5 strikeouts, 1 hit, and 6 walks, was really instructive of what Kopech is working with and dealing with right now. He has, even when it's not on, so to speak, a really good fastball. I mean, just a really good fastball. It's got elite spin rate. And however he does it, he looks like he's able to keep that thing off the barrel of the bat. The other pitches, the slider, the curveball, a changeup every now and again, have really been touch and go for Kopech in this season. There have been some nights where that slider looked like the nasty thing that he threw against the New York Yankees in a start out there in the Bronx last season. There are nights when the slider looks like, just kind of a get-me-over kind of pitch, not the out pitch that you'd like it to be. Last night, the command was obviously an issue, but it was not hard for him to avoid some of that contact coming around to hurt him later on. However, when you're walking six, that makes it almost impossible. Six in 4 2/3, that makes it almost impossible to not allow some of those runs to score. And what's even more damning here in that particular performance, last night's performance, is the leadoff walk in the fourth inning to Kyle Tucker. Tucker steals a base. Kopech is a little slow to the plate. Jose Abreu grounds out to the right side, the proper side of the infield, if you're looking to move a runner, and he did, from second to third for Tucker. And then Jeremy Pena, inside out at a fastball. I mean, he had no prayer of getting that pitch down for a hit. It ate him alive. But he was able to put a good enough swing on it and loft it enough into right field, deep enough to score the run from third. So he took a pitch, Jeremy Pena did, from Michael Kopech, where you're just not getting a hit. The likelihood of getting a hit on that pitch to the right-hander is just so low. But you can inside out that thing and make a productive out and score a run. And runs are, at the end of the day, how you decide who wins and loses a ball game. So those kind of outs, those kind of productive outs, though they're not choice A, they're a really solid choice B for hitters in situations like that. And when you walk too many, when you walk six like Kopech did last night, then you're putting yourself in a situation where outs can beat you. That's kind of how I like to think of it anyway. Obviously the three-run homer can sabotage you in that inning as well as anybody else because you've walked two of those runners, right? You've put those guys on base. But you are more vulnerable, so much more vulnerable to the routine of a baseball game, right? The fly ball to right field, the ground ball to the right side. Those routine things that happen in every baseball game, those can now beat you because you walked too many guys. And I think that's really, kind of been the issue for a lot of pitchers. Unfortunately for the White Sox this year, the walks have been far too many. The free passes have put a lot of guys with high strikeout totals, high strikeout ability. Think of, Kelly and Lopez and Middleton and Lucas and Dylan and even Lance. Those guys can all be high strikeout guys. But when those strikeouts need to happen with runners on base, they're harder to get because big league hitters know that you're trying to punch them out. And that you can take that slider off the outside corner and maybe just flip it into right, knowing that you're never going to get a hit on that particular swing, on that particular pitch. But given the fact that there was a walk and a ground out and now a runner at third, that out can hurt that starter because it scores a run. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. I'm Connor McKnight. You're listening to White Sox Weekly. We're back with more in just a bit.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitch, ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox and Astros coming up in just a little bit here this evening. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. Hold on to that number. We'll call and take phone calls in a little bit. We've got White Sox reliever Keenan Middleton joining us here on White Sox Weekly. First chance for us to talk to Keenan here on the show. Got to introduce myself to him a couple of weeks ago when he joined the ball club, and then he went on striking everybody out with nasty changeups and sliders. So it's a real joy to get to talk to Keenan this evening, this afternoon. Keenan, thanks for hopping on, man. Appreciate you.
Hey, how you doing? Happy to be here.
I'm doing really well. So first question for you is going to be one I'm hoping that you haven't been asked in a while. I went to high school in Wisconsin, spent a lot of time in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You went to high school in Milwaukee, Oregon. And I swear to you, Keenan, when I was looking up your baseball reference page, that's the moment I found out that there was a second Milwaukee in this country. Tell me about Milwaukee, Oregon. What's it like?
It's really weird. Like the slogan of Portland, keep Portland weird. It's just a bunch of strange people, and we do our own thing up there.
That is, so I've been to Portland, and I loved it. I loved that everybody was talking about keep Portland weird. There are so many. Is it just me, or are there too many one-way streets in Portland? Is it too weird? I got lost like for 2 hours.
Yeah, you sound like you're talking about downtown, and I don't go downtown. It's okay. Like a zombie land down there now. It's like Gotham City.
See, that was my mistake. I was going down to Portland State University to cover a football practice. Jerry Glanville was coaching there at the time, and I must have circled the football field 1,000 times before I found it.
Oh yeah, that's where they used to have the AAA baseball team right there.
Did you go watch them when you were a kid?
Yeah, we used to have field trips there all the time. It was pretty fun.
Did you? So you played a lot of hoops and a lot of baseball growing up, and kind of had a chance to, you know, start a professional road on either side. Did you, you know, start thinking when you were a kid, hey, you know, this AAA thing looks like a lot of fun. I like downtown Portland enough, even though the one-way streets, I could probably get an apartment close by. Like, when was it baseball for you?
No, it was definitely once I went to college. I even told all my coaches in high school, my baseball coaches, I didn't have any plans of playing baseball after high school. And that changed, and for the best.
What was the – give the scouting report – on the 20-year-old Keenan Middleton Hooper?
Well, I was a shooter mainly, but then, like, as I got into college, I wasn't so one-dimensional. I got a little bit more bouncy, and I became an all-around player and honestly became one of our better defenders too. So, I mean, I feel like right as I stopped playing basketball, I was getting to the best level I'd ever been.
I was talking with Keenan Middleton, White Sox reliever here on White Sox Weekly. I was having a conversation years ago with White Sox pitching coach Don Cooper, and I was, you know, a young baseball reporter just kind of, you know, figuring everything out. And we were talking about athleticism, just kind of in general, about pitchers in repeating delivery and all that kind of stuff. And he could not have been more, you know, just stressing the point that while pitching doesn't necessarily look like you need to be athletic to do it, give him the athlete, the guy who's come up and played a lot of different sports every single time, because that guy's delivery is going to be a more repeatable delivery. And when it does get out of whack, that athleticism enables a pitcher to get back to or even alter what needs to be gotten back to or altered. Do you find that, you know, that basketball background or that multi-sport kind of background helps in that regard?
Yeah, I grew up, I mean, since I can remember, I played three sports all the way through high school, until I got to high school. And so, yeah, you know, it's just that athleticism, just taking everything that I learned from every sport out into the next sport and trying to just gain as much ground as I can with my athleticism. I feel like when I got drafted, everybody dreamed about doing this stuff their whole life. And when I got thrown into the minor leagues, that's when I first really thought about it being my job. And so I had a lot of catching up to do, and there was a lot to figure out, but if I didn't have the athleticism, I don't know where I'd be right now.
What was the big eye-opening moment for you once you, you know, like you said, got drafted and this turned into a job?
My first at-bat was a home run in the minor leagues, and I was like, whoa, this is crazy.
Yeah, that'll do it.
I don't know what I got myself into right now.
Do you remember who got you?
I do not know, but I do remember it was a curveball, and I don't throw a curveball anymore for a good reason.
Is that why?
Probably has something to do with it.
I was looking through the pitch mix for you, though. It's been you've kind of evolved and changed here over a little bit. I'm sure the injury has something to do with that. Why? How has Keenan Middleton kind of changed in terms of the way you attack hitters, and why?
I think coming into the league, when I came up in 17, I was a two-pitch pitcher. I was fastball slider only. And right before I had TJ, I started throwing this changeup. Just didn't have a lot of confidence in it. And then coming back after Tommy John, I was just trying to regain that status of that guy with the fastball slider and just tinkering around with the changeup. And then last year, I threw the changeup a little bit more and had some success. And coming into this year, me and Ethan Katz had a talk coming into spring training, and he was like, that's a pitch that you can throw in any count. And I truly believe that, and that's what I've done this year. And so I tip my cap to Ethan and Kurt Hassler and the staff here for actually encouraging me to throw that pitch. I didn't believe in it, and they did, and it's honestly turned my year around. My career yet.
That's really interesting that you mentioned the changeup that specifically, because the first couple of times you worked, I think it was against the Pirates. It was really my first chance to get to watch you pitch. That changeup. Say it again.
Minnesota.
Apologies. I remember watching some of those games against, and you're throwing that changeup. You're attacking guys up in the zone with that changeup, and it really looked a lot to me like. Not the changeup necessarily, but in the situations and the counts and kind of the pitch sequencing, how Lucas attacks guys up with changeups when he wants to. Is there a conversation between the two of you or anything similar in kind of that philosophy?
Honestly, no. I talk with our relievers a lot more than I talk with our starters. And I don't know, just talking about mixing pitches and honestly, just attacking the hitters, like you said. I honestly am not a guy who's trying to be too fine unless I'm really trying to spot a fastball somewhere. For the most part, I'm just trying to throw my off-speed in the zone, and I feel like they're both swing and miss pitches, so, I mean, I could just live with the results after that. As long as I'm attacking these hitters and I'm keeping the pressure on them by throwing strikes, I think that I'm in a good spot.
Talking with White Sox reliever Keenan Middleton here on White Sox Weekly for another minute or two. I was reading back to some interviews you'd given prior in your career, and you mentioned that Kendall Graveman, a former teammate of yours in Seattle, was a really big, you know, kind of professional guide for you. I don't want to say mentor if you didn't mean it that way, but it kind of felt like that.
No, right. He really is a mentor. Graveman's a guy that when I was with the Angels, he was with the A's, so playing against him. And he's always plunking Trouty, trying to miss. He's just trying to go up and in, and he's missing them. And I'm like, God, I hate this guy. And you get on the same team in Seattle, and you realize that he's one of the greatest human beings to walk on earth. And like you said, he's a great mentor. He's a guy that, like, even last night, I was in a bad, bad mood, and he's a guy who can just reel me in and get me back on track. And so I he's a great mentor for me.
That's really cool to be able to connect with a teammate like that from, you know, from the other side, and then get to play with him and kind of come to terms about what it is that makes you guys kind of cool.
Yeah, right. And like we both got little girls. We're both girl dads, so we have a lot more in common than we actually thought. And then we got on the same team, and we've been great friends since.
All right, so Keenan, I'm just beginning my journey as a girl dad. She's 5 months old.
Okay.
I asked Jake about this. He's got a boy, obviously, but I think I asked Kendall about it a while ago. What's the biggest piece of advice? What should I know? Let me get the pen and paper out. Keenan, guide me, my friend.
I mean, they're my best friends. I look forward to everything that I get with them, whether that's time here at the field, whether that's time at home. They're everything to me. When I am so frustrated with this game and everything going on, it's easy to just take a step back once you see their faces and everything. You forget about everything else, and I don't know. They're my glue. They hold my life together.
That's awesome, and it really is. I think one of the things that, you know, as we approach Mother's Day here tomorrow and Father's Day later on in the season, I think those of us with kids and newly on in that journey kind of get to a point where you go, boy, today's been terrible, and then you get home and you see them and you kind of forget about all that stuff. I didn't realize how material that was, how like truly honest that actually works.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. Like last night, it was a late game. I had a frustrating outing, got the ball drilled off my leg. I get home and I see my six-month-old sleeping, and I forget about everything. I just picked her up, hold her, and my night was so much better just right there in that moment.
Well, see, yours, if she's sleeping, that's good. Mine was kind of screaming and yelling a little bit, but that's neither here nor there. How is the leg? Are you good?
Oh, yeah, I'm great. It was a character builder.
That's a good way of putting it. Keenan, as we let you go here, I did want to ask you, too, and we kind of started talking about family. You coach, too. You are a basketball coach. What is that? Why? You know, what's the drive behind that? You could very easily kind of hang them up in the off season.
Yeah, I don't know. My very first off season after I got drafted, I was around. Honestly, I just loved the game of basketball. You know, just going to the high school for open gyms, and the coaches saw me interacting with players during these open gyms and coaching them up a little bit. And so I got asked to be an assistant. Then I was the JV head coach for 3 seasons, and then I got put on the 40-man. So my time into that was a little bit less, you know, coming out to spring training a little bit earlier. And so I've just been an assistant, I think, for the last 5-6 years. And I love it, man. Honestly, it's a place where I can bring my family. They always welcome me to bring my family. And I'm pretty much at the high school all day long, working with kids, whether it's for baseball or basketball. And I love it. It honestly makes my off seasons fly by. So it's very enjoyable.
That's awesome, man. That's really, really cool. Hey, appreciate you carving out some time for us this afternoon. Good luck today. Go get them. And hope the character has been raised just a little bit given the comebacker last night.
Only fuels my fire. Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.
Got it. White Sox reliever Keenan Middleton. The fire is fueled for that man. That's a good conversation. Awesome to check in with Keenan. We appreciate his time. We're going to take a quick break. We'll talk to Scott Merkin in a little while, White Sox beat reporter for MLB.com, coming up at 5 o'clock. On the other side of a break, we put together a career retrospective, kind of a thank you, best way we knew how, to Jose Abreu as he made his return to 35th in Shields last night. You will hear that in case you missed it when we come back on White Sox Weekly. It's the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Greeny, 10 to noon weekdays, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. We just had Keenan Middleton, White Sox reliever, on. Talked about a lot of different stuff. He's a fun dude to talk with. There just aren't a lot of guys that I've met in baseball that, you know, have the connection to basketball the way he does to another sport. So that was a really cool conversation. I have also, that's the first time that I've heard a comebacker off a pitcher called a character builder, and I love that. I think that's super cool, very tough guy, very, all right, get back out there, get him the next day, I'm angry kind of stuff. So that was a good conversation with Keenan Middleton. Really appreciate his time coming on the show this afternoon. We last night saw something pretty impressive, I thought, and mostly that was the number of White Sox fans through a 2-hour and 10-minute rain delay that hung around and waited to see Jose Abreu back at 35th and Shields. And all they wanted to do was say thank you. I think that speaks to a White Sox fans, right? I think that speaks to exactly what, you know, that guy did for the ball club for 9 seasons. Goodbyes are bittersweet. They always are. There's another chapter in everybody's life, you know, more or less, and especially in baseball. The thing is a business, and sometimes, you know, it doesn't go the way you want it, even if you run the business. You know, it sucks that way. But last night, you got 2 moments on the field where White Sox fans were able to, and Jose Abreu was able to say thank you the way that you do. During the pregame, on the center field scoreboard video screen, they played a tribute video to Jose Abreu. It was about a 2-minute thing. Abreu, in classic Jose fashion, real quickly jumped out of the Astros dugout, gave a fist pump into the air, a lot like John Bender does at the end of The Breakfast Club, and then ran back into the dugout. Abreu is, if nothing else, reticent to be in the spotlight. Just that's not his place. That's not where he wants to be. He'd rather be working. But even a guy like Abreu understands that a moment like that is one you take advantage of, not necessarily for yourself, but for everybody else who watched you play and came out to see you for 9 straight seasons. The other time that the White Sox fans and Abreu got to kind of share their emotions back and forth was when he came to the plate for the first time. We were just coming back from break, and Sox fans were already on their feet and launched into applause for Jose Abreu. He lined out to Elvis Andrus at second base, an absolute rocket, but straight into the glove of the White Sox second baseman, Elvis Andrus. Abreu's gotten off to a slow start to the season for the Astros, and they certainly hope he'll be turning things around. He was dropped in the lineup last night from 4 to 5. He was 1 for 5. Had a single into right field. Where else would Jose Abreu hit the ball? A single into right field, that's classic Jose Abreu. So for our part, the best way we could, we wanted to put together a retrospective in the pregame show yesterday. We played this yesterday and thought we'd probably give it another go here on White Sox Weekly, since, you know, last night's a Friday night, and if you were really interested in coming out and saying thank you to Jose Abreu, you probably bought a ticket to the game and were in there. So for those of you who missed it, whether you were walking around in the concourse, White Sox fans who were elsewhere tuned into the game last night, here it is, just a little bit of our thank you and remembrance of Jose Abreu's 9 years on the South Side. Tonight, we welcome an all-time franchise great back to the South Side, a fan favorite, a teammate's favorite. In October of 2013, Jose Abreu and the White Sox made it official.
When Jose became available towards the end of the summer, it became clear that he was a very high priority target for us.
Abreu would not only carry on a White Sox tradition of exemplary play at first base, he would also become the latest to carry the torch lit by Minnie Mañoso as a Cuban-born White Sox player. Immediately, Abreu made an impact.
That is high in the left field. Stretch! Stretch! Get on back there! Get on back there!
It's out.
It will. It is a three-run homer. You can put it on the board. Yes! Yes! His first homer. First of many.
Later that month, his first month on the job, Abreu walked off the Tampa Bay Rays in grand fashion.
That ball hit hard. Get over his head. Way back. He looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes! 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 A grand slam by Jose Abreu. And the Sox win it 9-6.
Jose Abreu became just the second rookie to ever win a game with a grand slam. That, plus leading Major League Baseball in slugging percentage while hitting .317, was more than enough to win him Rookie of the Year.
Well, for the ninth time in the history of the voting for this award, we have a unanimous winner. It's the Jackie Robinson Rookie of the Year in the American League, Jose Abreu of the White Sox.
From 2015 to 2019, Abreu would garner MVP votes in three separate seasons, two All-Star nods, and three Silver Sluggers. He led the American League in total bases in 2017, and in 2019, led the American League in runs batted in. All of that was mere setup for Abreu's greatest individual achievement, the 2020 season. While we all had to stay home and long to be at the ballpark, Jose Abreu put on as good a show that summer as you could possibly imagine. One night in August, just a few miles north of home, Abreu showed the Cubs how to hit for power.
0-2.
Jose in the air left field. One more time, bring him home.
Well, we told you back in the sixth inning that Jose sometimes takes it into his own hands. We didn't believe at that point that three home runs later, he'd have a perfect night, 4-for-4 with a walk and three bombs.
When the White Sox made the playoffs and faced the Oakland Athletics in the wild card, Abreu put his power display on the national stage.
And that ball is hit in the air into the deep left field. Backing up on that one now is Grossman. He'll turn and watch, and it's gone! Jose Abreu reaches the seats. Second home run of the game for the White Sox, and this one puts him up 3-0.
Jose Abreu led the American League in hits, slugging percentage, and games played in 2020. He led all of baseball in total bases and runs batted in. He had 60 that season, the same number of runs batted in as games played in that pandemic-shortened season.
Your 2020 MVP of the American League this year is Jose Abreu.
Abreu, for years, was defined by toughness. Knock him down, he'd be right back up. There was almost no hurting the man. Just 2 days after a collision on the base paths nearly took him out, there was Abreu, running with every fiber of his being to score the winning run for his team at home.
Infield back. Mercedes takes off for second. The pitch gets away. Here comes Abreu. He will score! White Sox win! They win it!
In one of the greatest regular season games, the first ever Field of Dreams game in Dyersville, Iowa, there was Abreu, creating more than just a memory.
Heaney on an 0-2. Drilled in the air, deep left, and it is in the corn! Jose with a home run!
All that work, all that toughness, all those days, On an August night against the Yankees, Abreu passed Hall of Famer Harold Baines on the White Sox all-time home run list. Like usual, it was an individual achievement that meant more to the team than himself.
Ready for another 3-2. The pitch, swing and a high drive. We are tied! Jose Abreu with a home run to left center.
All things must come to an end. But like he did for 9 seasons here at 35th and Shields, Jose Abreu plays on. Welcome back, Jose. And thanks for everything. That was our thank you to Jose Abreu. It aired in the pregame show last night, and we hope you liked it. We'll tell you what's coming up here on White Sox Weekly in just 10 seconds. We pause here for station identification.
Live from the Old National Bank State Street Studio, this is WMVP WSAG HD2, Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
We will talk with White Sox scribe Scott Merkin when we come back. He covers the Sox for MLB.com. That's coming up on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Workers are present or not. And remember, in real life, you can't just hit the reset button. It's not a game. Visit itsnotagameillinois.com to learn more.
The ESPN Chicago Triple Play AM FM HD and app.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. Catch the biggest matchups at the best value for the 2023 season. Enjoy flexible payment plans, a ticket exchange program, and more. For more information, visit whitesox.com/ticket plans or call 312-674-1000. I'm Connor McKnight. We've got the pregame show coming up in 36 minutes. White Sox and Astros at 6:15 tonight. Scott Merkin of MLB.com is a good friend of the program. And, Merk, we appreciate you hopping on this, I don't know, it's 5 o'clock evening or afternoon for you, man. I always kind of get stuck at this time wishing whether I knew whether to wish somebody good evening or good afternoon.
Yeah, it pretty much all runs together after getting home around 1:30 following the two-hour rain delay last night. So just a weekend is good, I think,
yeah,
overall.
Yeah, all right. A good weekend to you. Hey, you know, Merk, I want to start with this, my man. You guys in the press box last night had a very cool night saying thanks to Mark Gonzalez, who's covered both the White Sox and Cubs for the last, I believe, it's 32 years for Gonzo. You guys said congratulations. The Baseball Writers Association of America, of which Gonzo's a member, said congratulations in a tweet earlier this afternoon. You tweeted, and I hate to read it back to you, but not everyone's reading Twitter while we're talking, so here it is. You tweeted that only one sports writer in the history of the planet has covered both a White Sox World Series championship and a Chicago Cubs championship, and that man is Mark Gonzalez. He's moving on to a cool career opportunity out in Arizona. Gonzo's an absolute favorite of mine, and I know he means a ton to you guys in the writer's room as well.
Yeah, great guy. And I should stress, you know, I think I put that a primary beat writer for both teams because, you know, a guy like Sully. Actually, I did coverage on both those too, but I mean, in terms of going through the daily rigors of primary beat writer, there's one person in the history of Chicago media or BBWA or baseball coverage that has done that, and that is Mark Gonzalez. Great guy, great friend. I mean, just because he's moving, you know, he's moving on to another endeavor. It's not like he's leaving the planet forever. He's going to be here or he's going to be around. We'll see him. We'll see him in spring training. I'm sure he'll be back in Chicago, but nothing but great memories of my friendship and working with him. And I mean, we had we have a great crew now covering the team, but it was a crazy crew way back when with myself and Mark Gonzalez and Joe Colley and Doug Padilla. Scott Gregor is still here. He's the dean. He's got me by about 9 years, I think, in terms of covering the team. What a great ride in 05 and, you know, really 06, 07, 08, all those seasons were tremendous. And then he moved over to the Cubs and saw the same thing. He's seen a lot of really good baseball. He's seen a lot of really bad baseball over the years, but always stayed the same person. And he's been in Chicago since 05, I want to say. And then I, you know, was all, I think, Arizona and San Francisco. So he's done it all. I always kid him and he tells me to just be quiet, but I think he's going to, you know, he'll someday get that Lifetime Achievement Award from the BBWA, and he definitely deserves it. A tremendous person and a tremendous reporter.
If there's anything I can sign to endorse that from outside the BBWA, please let me know, because I will absolutely do that for Gonzo. Just a quick story for those of you who listen to White Sox Weekly quite a bit or have heard me on the air over the years. Merk, I've told you this story. I got to meet Ken Griffey Jr. when he came back as a Mariner to Guaranteed Rate Field, And most of that was because that list of beat writers that you mentioned with the White Sox, those were most of the guys when I started covering this team in 2009. Gonzo was the guy that just said, listen, I'm going to go talk to Griffey. You want to meet him? Do I want to meet Junior? Yeah, I think I do. So I went over there. I ignored the rest of my responsibilities for the other station I was working for at the time, and I followed Gonzo into the visitor's locker room and hung out by Ken Griffey Jr.'s locker for the better part of 25 minutes, which is an all-time career highlight for me. That's what he did.
Two quick things on that. You know, I covered Griffey Jr. from the trade deadline till the end of the season in 08, of course, made one of the more iconic throws in White Sox history in the blackout game. What a tremendous guy. It's funny, though, he didn't particularly love talking about baseball. Probably at that point, he had talked about baseball his entire adult life, right? So you could talk to him about his son playing football, about the Cowboys, about, you know, racing and that kind of thing. Loved it, but just wasn't great on talking about baseball. And to give you an idea, just a quick one about the group we had. We once got written up, I won't tell you which press box, it was a visiting one, for being too loud and boisterous. I've never seen that happen in the 21 years I've covered the team, but we achieved that in a press box for being too loud and boisterous. And needless to say, that didn't quiet us down. It probably had the reverse effect when we were told by the media relations person who didn't really want to tell us, but he kind of laughed and he goes, I'll share it with you guys anyways. I know how this is going to turn out. So
yeah.
I've had fun with this group. I've been very lucky, the people I've worked with, because you're with them more than with your family, pretty much, you know.
Imagine looking at Doug Padilla and Joe Cowley and saying you're too loud and expecting either of them to stop talking. What a
great
preposterous
guys, though. And trust me, I was the brunt of some humor at times from them both, but both just tremendous people.
So this ball club has had some troubles here, Scott. It has been a tough go here, no doubt about it. We just got off the phone with Keenan Middleton a little while ago. That's a worthwhile addition on all fronts to the White Sox bullpen. But you know, as we start, let's begin with the pitching. Are there big issues that you'd like to see this team nail down on the pitching side sooner rather than later? What stands out to you? What's absolutely got to change first?
Well, I think there's injuries, and then there's, by you know, their own admission, some underperformance. You know, I mean, Lance is better than what he's shown. Dylan Cease has had a rough run in, I guess, the last four or five starts, maybe. And, you know, Kopech had good stuff last night, but couldn't get it consistently over the plate. So it's a little bit of all that stuff. Clevenger's been pretty decent, and Lucas has been tremendous, especially like the last, I think pretty much aside from the Pittsburgh star, right? Lucas has been tremendous this year. And I think the bullpen, whenever you have two key guys out, now granted, they knew both guys were going to be out. I mean, they knew both guys from December were going to be out when Liam, you know, found out about the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma diagnosis, and Garrett Crochet was, you know, they knew was not going to be ready at the start of the season. But when you take two key pieces out of that and you move guys around, well, it's going to, even with Gregory Santos having a really good start to the season, even with Keenan Middleton being outstanding since he got here, Joe Kelly, I think, has retired 14 straight batters. Kendall Graveman's been great. Lopez has had some good moments too, but I think when you have things set up where you know Liam is the ninth, you know Crochet is the eighth or the seventh, and you can move guys around, it makes the bullpen better. Now, the only issue is, and we've talked about this with players, and we've talked about this among ourselves, I talked about this with fans, is that, you know, when these guys all come back, you don't want to be 21 games under 500 at that point. Because regardless of this division being bad, and it is, you know, every team in the AL Central lost last night. Now the Twins, I think, if not have won, are about to win today against the Cubs. But you're not going to win the division 10 games under. You're not going to win, as someone pointed out to me, no team under 500 has won the division. I think in 94, maybe the strike season, whoever was winning the AL West was under 500 at that point. But, you know, you got to get to at least 82 wins to have a shot at winning a division. So if you start getting your, I mean, 14 is enough. 14 is a month, pretty much, right, of really good baseball to get yourself back in it. 14 under is what they're at right now. You start getting 20, 21, and you're pretty much, even with the division not having a Rays or an Orioles or a Braves at the top of it right now, you're really up against it at that point. So it's going to be great that they get these guys healthy. Yoan Moncada is back in terms of the position player side. Berger's back, although Grandal dealing with a little bit of a hamstring, and Andrus sounds like he's going to be out a little bit with the left oblique. But again, it may not matter, but it's going to be quite a hill to climb when you get healthy, when you get guys back, if you're that far below 500.
Yeah, so the Twins, as you mentioned, they're up 11-1 on the Cubs.
Yeah,
bottom
they're probably going to hang on.
Yeah, I think they'll probably turn that into a W. They've got a chance to add a few more, second and third with two away in that ball game for the Twins. And then you mentioned, I guess we probably should update. I'm sure you've spoken with guys in the clubhouse and perhaps even Pedro at this point. What is the prognosis on Elvis Andrus? He's on the IL, of course, and then you know Pedro was pretty adamant yesterday about the wait-and-see approach for Grandal, given right. that it's a hamstring and not wanting to pull the trigger on an IL stint too early on what is obviously your starting catcher.
Yeah, you know, obliques are odd injuries. Not that I've ever had one. I think I have an oblique muscle, but I've never
you
strained
do.
It
yeah,
before.
Pretty sure you do. Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, look at Jake. Jake had it, and he was back, and he's going to be back in the normal time of the injured list. And Pedro's a little less certain on Elvis. But, again, I understand where he's coming from. This just happened last night. He's on the IL. There's no waiting process. So, clearly, it's bothering him. You know, they're ready to go with someone else in there. And with Romy Gonzalez coming up today. So, there's no timetable set aside from that he's on the injured list. So, we'll see what happens. But, and then Yasmani was in the starting lineup today, got scratched, and it sounds like Pedro's leaning towards not playing him tomorrow, at least at this point, because they have their one off day or their second off day in May coming up on Monday. So that'll give him, what, 4 days, 4 days and change off, right? 4 days and part of the game on Thursday off, and then ready for Tuesday. And I would guess if he's not ready for Tuesday, they'll revisit it then and see what's going on. So, you know, he was originally there tonight, I believe, as the DH. And that was replaced by Carlos Perez. So we'll see what moving forward if Tuesday is the day that he's ready to go.
What seems to be the upcoming plan for second base?
Yeah, Pedro talked about that. It sounds like it's going to be, you know, Hanser Alberto. No, he didn't make it like, okay, he's getting all the at bats there. You know, Romy's here right now. Jake Berger's coming back, but Jake obviously is, you know, that was tried in the minors, but I don't think they're going to have him learn second on the fly in the big leagues, although he really enjoys, Pete told me, he really enjoys playing second base. So I think it's going to belong to Hanser Alberto for a little bit until Elvis is ready. You know, Lenin Sosa was just sent down. He could have come up for an injury. He's with AAA Charlotte right now. And, you know, Alberto has hit the ball pretty decently in his limited role. But again, this is, again, I'm talking about, you know, having guys in their specific responsibilities where he was not signed to be an everyday player, right? He was signed to be kind of the, you know, guy who plays all around the field and, you know, maybe starts 4 or 5 games a week. So we'll see what happens. But according to Pedro today, he's, I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but he said that, you know, Hanser will get those at-bats at second base for now.
You've mentioned, too, that the expectation is Jake Berger just needs until Tuesday to get back to the big league level, a couple of minor
leagues. I think he could be, he's eligible to come off tomorrow. So I think he could, he's with the team right now. He returned today. So I think I was at Yasmani I was talking. That he may be off until Tuesday, and then they'll judge them. But I think Berger could be activated tomorrow. He was in the clubhouse. They spoke to him before the game today.
Oh, well, there you go. That's why you have a White Sox beat writer on as soon as you can on White Sox Weekly. So I guess the idea there is, you know, Berger, Sheets are kind of your lefty-righty DH mix. And
right.
You'll see Gavin, I would imagine, in right field, and Adam Haseley out there quite a bit seems to be getting some run. That's kind of the upcoming week or so, next 2 weeks.
Right. And then, you know, Aloy is coming back from the appendectomy and they're, you know, he's, I think, feeling better, but at the very basic stages of the recovery, he's not really doing anything but moving around right now. So, you know, they've had this issue before. I think it was what, Adam Dunn's first year, right?
Yeah.
Where he had an appendectomy and somehow, some way came back in 6 days. And I think homered in that first game that he came back. But I know in talking to Sox people, they regret not giving him, in hindsight, giving him more time off then. So that's just an example. To fast forward 12 years later where, I think they said 4 to 6 weeks on Aloy, right? And it may be a little shorter, but I don't know if it's going to be a lot shorter because they want to make sure that he's 100% healed when they put him out there.
Yeah, I think, too, when you start talking about core muscle issues, like you talked about with Dunn, there can be a cascading effect, right? Like one thing may begin to affect another, and that's why, you know, for Sox fans who are like, boy, 4 to 6 weeks, that I think that's why there's the drive to make sure there's enough time, as much time as possible, right?
Yeah, I look at it, and this may be a weird analogy, I look at it as like when you fly from Chicago to Kansas City, and they say, oh, it's an hour and 25-minute flight, and they get there in 58 minutes, and they say, hey, we arrived early, you know, whereas the flight was really about 1.05 hours the whole time, you know, so they arrived a little early. So I think 4 to 6 weeks is the far end. 6 weeks is probably the far end. So I think, you know, maybe a month is closer to it. But again, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not dealing with the, I haven't dealt with this kind of injury, not injury, but medical issue before. I just know that they're not going to rush him back. You know, when he is healthy, when he's checked off all the boxes, when he can do everything fully healthy, they're gonna have Eloy back in the lineup.
So Dylan Cease starts tonight. He was magnificent in his first start of the year against the Astros.
Yes.
I mean, truly special.
On national TV, right? I mean,
yeah.
Just a brilliant performance. I mean, a brilliant performance following up all the brilliant performances he had in 2022, right?
What seems, when you talk to Dylan, as you've talked around everybody in this clubhouse, what seems to be the issue here? His post-game press conference after the last start that went sideways on him, you know, he really began to talk a little bit more specifically about what he's trying to work on. I wonder what kind of context you can offer here.
Yeah, you know, I think a couple things. I think just talking to people around the team, his slider, which I don't think I'm stretching by saying if you look at StatCast, was probably the most dominant pitch in baseball last year, has been a little off target, I think. He's talked about he spiked a few of them too many times. And if you look at going back to StatCast, I think he has the biggest jump of hard hit contact between last year and this year. So again, I think it's just, he had a little bit of the stretch like this at the beginning last year and then did what, like 14 straight starts where he had allowed one earned run or less. So I think Dylan is always just that one start away from going on a start that puts him from struggling a little bit to being in Cy Young contention, you know? So I wouldn't worry that much about him, but I think it's all part of, as we talked about earlier, this interview, the bigger picture, you know, that, you know, you can, if the team is 500 or something like that, you say, okay, he's gonna turn around, he's gonna make it. But I think with, you don't want to be, you know, Michael Kopech talked about this last night about he felt like he was pressing, that he was trying to make every pitch too perfect last night. And I think you tend to do that when you're a team with serious playoff aspirations coming into the season, and you're now 13-7 and one game out of last, and I think five games out of third place, right? So even 40 games in of a 162-game season, you start to feel it a little bit. So I think that's the whole thing is, you know, people want Dylan to be good yesterday, back to dominant yesterday. And I think he'll get there. I think it's just a matter of time for Dylan. He's too talented to have this carry on for too much longer.
How was seeing Jose Abreu last night?
It's great. You know, I mean, I really enjoyed covering Jose. He's just a great guy, just a quality dude. It was interesting to see him joke around with the other players in the field at one point. Actually, not one point. The first play of the game might have been like the first three pitches. Tim Anderson hit a hard hit grounder to Jose, and he made a nice short hop pick and beat him to the bag, step on first. And Anderson runs through the bag, and then on the way back kind of gives Jose like a little punch, and not, you know, like a playful punch at the side, and then runs to the dugout. And, you know, Jose's just a quality guy. He was a seminal part of this franchise for almost a decade. I mean, look at him. He played 9 years, and he's third all time in this team in home runs. Now he's a decent piece behind the two top guys who are Hall of Famer Frank Thomas and Paul Konerko. But I totally expect at some point number 79 will be retired, and not just because I don't know any other player who's going to wear number 79, but just because he meant so much to the organization. Now, I will say it was a great tribute to him. He seemed to enjoy it. He seemed, you know, he got a standing ovation. Classy move by Seppi Zavala, Michael Kopech, to let him take it in for a little bit and then get back in the batter's box. But I think both sides, and this is not being crass or anything or unfeeling, but I think both sides are over it. He's not part of the Houston Astros, and they don't want him to get a hit the next 2 days, right? They want to beat them and keep him off the bases for two straight games. He'll always have a special place, you know, in White Sox organization. I'm sure he'll be welcome back after he's done playing. But right now they want to beat him, and they enjoyed celebrating him last night. Now it's on to baseball.
That's how the business works, my friend. Appreciate
exactly
you as
it,
always.
Connor.
Thanks so much for talking, and enjoy the ball game tonight.
Okay, thanks, Connor. Take care.
You got it. Scott Merkin, MLB.com, frequent guest here on White Sox Weekly, and we really appreciate his time and context. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. We're back with more White Sox Weekly in just a minute here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
You've got the jersey, the ball cap, the foam finger. Everyone can see you're a Chicago White Sox fan from a mile away. Ready to take your look to the next level? Upgrade your wallet with an exclusive Sox debit card, which you can get when you open a Wintrust Sox checking account. With no monthly fees, free ATMs nationwide, and a $300 bonus when you open your account with qualifying activities. Start showing your Sox pride with every purchase. Sign up at Wintrust.com/Sox. Only $100 required to open. No monthly minimum balance and no monthly maintenance fees. Member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender.
White Sox fans, swing for the fences this season with a brand new Mazda for Mazda of Orland Park. Proudly sponsoring the Chicago White Sox and Chicago White Sox charities for more than a decade, Mazda of Orland Park offers everything from the brand new 2024 Mazda CX-90 to all your favorite 2023 models, along with exceptional service each and every time. To learn more about our available inventory, give us a call at 708-444-3200 or visit us at ZoomZoomNation.com.
Before cell phones, before GPS and nav systems, an atlas was what you used to map out your journey. Today, Atlas is your route to finding people. We're talking about Atlas Employment Services. Atlas is a boutique staffing agency specializing in food and beverage, e-commerce, manufacturing, and industrial. They help you find the crew to keep your lines moving. They can help you find short-term or temp to permanent hires. Atlas Employment Services. Go to atlasemployment.com.
If you've been involved in an accident, yeah, you're going to have questions, you're going to have bills, and you're going to have medical issues. But you will also have me. I'm attorney Tony Ivone. Visit me at calltony.com or call 708-400-0000. You don't have to struggle alone against the insurance company. I'm here to fight for you. Visit calltony.com or call me at 708-4-MILLION. Because you deserve better.
Money saved through energy efficiency can directly benefit a business's bottom line. That's why businesses throughout Northern Illinois are partnering with the ComEd Energy Efficiency Program to find up to 35% in energy savings, resulting in lower energy costs for their facilities. Because at ComEd, we're powering your business's future. Learn more at comed.com/poweringbiz. ComEd, powering lives. Savings figure is hypothetical only. Actual savings will vary based on the measures implemented and on customers' usage and rate.
Long week? It's time for a smooth Tito's handmade vodka cocktail. Staying in or going out, serving cocktails for two, or mixing drinks for the squad, barbecuing in the backyard, or snagging your favorite bar stool. No matter the occasion, just add Tito's to kick off the weekend just right. Tito's handmade vodka is distilled from corn and is naturally gluten-free. Find recipes and more at titosvodka.com. 40% alcohol by volume, namely 80 proof. Distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas. Crafted to be savored responsibly.
When it comes to authentic tortilla chips, El Ranchero is number one in Chicagoland. Choose from our salted, unsalted, spiced, restaurant-style, and chipotle flavors, and enjoy them with your favorite salsas and meals. El Ranchero is the perfect dip chip. And don't forget to try El Ranchero's flat tostadas in the thicker and crunchier Tostadas Rancheras. El Ranchero uses only natural ingredients for the most authentic Mexican taste. Get El Ranchero at your nearest store or visit rancherofood.com.
Calling all baseball fans. Are you ready to hit a home run with your wallet? Sell your old vehicle for cash today with Pick Your Part. They're the cleanup hitters of the auto industry, willing to pay you top dollar for your old car, truck, or SUV. Whether you're facing a curveball or a fastball, their team is ready to swing for the fences and make you an offer you can't refuse. Their all-star lineup of representatives will even pick it up for you, so don't sit on the bench and let your vehicle collect dust. Step up to the plate and call 800-962-CARS for a free quote today. Pick Your Part makes selling your vehicle as easy as a base hit. Dial 800-962-CARS. That's right, 800-962-2277. And let them be your MVP today.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. Sox fans, catch the action from a private diamond suite this season. Host your closest friends and family with customizable food and beverage options. For more information, visit whitesox.com/suites or call or text 312-674-1000. White Sox closer Liam Hendricks, as you know, is in AAA Charlotte, working back from a non-Hodgkin lymphoma diagnosis during the offseason. He is in remission. He got to ring the bell, being done with chemo, the whole thing. It's truly been incredible. The fact that he's even anywhere close to coming back at this point is remarkable. In his last minor league rehab outing, he threw two-thirds of an inning and gave up four earned runs on two home runs, struck out one. The rest of the outings have been very good. That is all to say, the results for Liam, you know, the actual on-field baseball numbers, the ones I just read for you, matter very little. And what's more important is how he feels, what the velocity looks like, how he feels getting to that velocity, which are two different things, a bit nuanced, but definitely meaningful here. The sound is, the idea is, it seems like, that there were back-to-back outings for Liam earlier this week. He'll pitch again Sunday. AAA does not play on Mondays anymore. They've kind of got a different schedule down there in the minors, but they don't play on Mondays, so they'll use that off day to kind of evaluate things and see where everybody's at. Regardless of whether Liam is going to rejoin the ball club against the Guardians on Tuesday, I mean, that'd be the earliest he could, or a little bit later in the week, or a little bit later in the season, for that matter, he's been making headlines. For more than just that he's coming back from cancer, I caught this. Sox on 35th is a really good White Sox. It's not a fan blog. It's probably more than that, but I can't think of a better word to describe them. They do really great work. And I saw them post this, and I hope they don't mind. It is, you know, it's dugout footage and stuff. It's in other places, too, and you can find it there. But I saw it. I loved it. When Liam talks, I listen. I think a lot of people do around this league. And what you're going to hear here is about 2 minutes of Liam Hendricks kind of dishing on how he advises minor leaguers. Just a quick story. I was an intern in high A Carolina League baseball. I was with the Myrtle Beach Pelicans. They were a Braves affiliate at the time. And I was just an intern. I mean, nobody knew me from Adam. I was just a guy. But I got a chance to, you know, see a lot of different sides of minor league life. And at one point, since it was the Braves organization, Tom Glavin made a minor league rehab start with the Pelicans, right? And this, I mean, it was a thing, right? I mean, everybody, Tom Glavin's coming to Myrtle Beach. And the place, the ballpark was absolutely packed. Every player was like, oh my God, Tom Glavin's going to come pitch. This is like, we're all so in the pregame warm up and all that kind of stuff. Glavin's out there throwing his bullpen, and every single Pelican pitcher is like lined up against the wall, staring intently, trying to discern what makes Glavin a future Hall of Famer in this bullpen, right? I mean, they're just pouring every ounce of their attention into Tom Glavin throwing a bullpen session. And then he gets into the ball game and the whole thing, and Glavin did what big leaguers do. He got the whole, it was just one minor league start for him. I think he left to go back to Atlanta like right after the game. And when he, you know, after he'd gone, we found it, he paid for the spread like big leaguers do, right? And it was a big, you know, from one of the steakhouses down there, the whole thing. I mean, just guys ate like kings and all that kind of stuff. So that's what happens when big leaguers are down there. But when it's an extended stay, you've got a chance, like a rehab assignment, like Liam is undergoing, like a reliever undergoes with a multiple kind of chances to go at the thing. You get a bit of a different chance to bond with, talk with, and kind of glean information from this big leaguer. And I thought Liam's conversation about minor league life here with some reporters at AAA Charlotte was a really interesting one, and I thought we'd bring it to you here.
I was having this conversation with the guys earlier. When I was in AAA, I was making $2,700 a month and had to pay for my own housing. So it's slightly different these days, but you see everyone has the common goal of getting to the big leagues. That hasn't changed at all. Everyone's trying to get down here. They're trying to put their best foot forward. They're trying to make sure that someone notices what they're able to do on the field and be able to get that call up. And it's something that you realize. I come down here and I've told everyone, ask me any question you want. I don't care. I'm an open book. I'm not one of those salty veterans who's going to come down here making sure that I stick around. I couldn't care less. If it's my time, it's my time. I've accomplished almost everything I want to do in this game. And if it's time for the next set of players to come up, or if I can help out anybody that's in a situation where they have an opportunity to make an impact on the team, that's great. But at the end of the day, yeah, you look back and you realize that there were some opportunities that I was able to get that I was very lucky to have. And there were some opportunities that passed some guys by that should have had an opportunity as well. And it's an unfortunate part of the game, but coming down here, and it definitely humbles you, and you get to the point where you stop kind of taking everything for granted in the big leagues. There's a lot of things that you get that are like very nice up there, whether it be clubhouses, travel, food, and all this sort of stuff. You want to make sure that you remind yourself and humble yourself the fact that it can be different, and it can be different very quickly. I mean, I went from the big leagues to being DFA'd in 2018, and I was lucky in the fact that I had some good people around me to help. I think it was a Mike Piazza quote from years ago that said, I think everybody who spent 7 or 8 years in the big leagues should spend a month at least in the minor leagues to gain appreciation for what they have on a day-to-day basis in the major leagues. And that's something that I 100% agree.
That's White Sox closer Liam Hendricks, and I could not agree more with just about every syllable he uttered there, especially, I mean, not having played big league ball, obviously, but having spent a fair amount of time in and around the minors, I completely agree. It is a very good thing, in my humble opinion, that minor league pay and unionization has happened this year, and that these guys are going to be taken care of a little bit better than in the past. The conditions down there can be really difficult for players to just shoot, stay healthy, and get better at baseball, much less anything else. So it is a really good thing that is in a better situation now than even when guys like Liam were toiling away in the minor leagues back in the day. We had to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll wrap up White Sox Weekly. It's the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. We are saying goodbye here on White Sox Weekly, and a huge thank you to White Sox reliever Keenan Middleton, White Sox beat reporter Scott Merkin of MLB.com, and to our producers Jake Cantu and Kendra Smith. Don't go anywhere. White Sox pregame show for the Sox and Astros starts in just 3 minutes on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.